Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Bava Kama Daf Tes. We begin 8 lines from the top with the words Esve Rav Nachman L'Rav Huna. We continue to learn for the safety of all of our forces in Eretz Yisrael. They should be safe. They should return home soon. They should be able to bring the captives back with them, and there shouldn't be any more karbanos in Klai Yisrael. All those in need of refuah shlema should be Ezus Hashem. Have a refuah shlema b'mehera. Okay, we pick up again 8 lines from the top. Tes Omid Aleph, Meseches Baba Kama. Esve, Rav Nachman, Rav Huna. Rav Nachman asked Rav Huna the following question. Now this goes back to what we had learned a couple of shiurim ago, the seemingly contrast between the Pasuk in Mishpatim says, Meitav Sodeyu, Meitav Karmo Yishalem, that you have to pay from the best, and then it says, Kesef Yoshiv Livolov, that you go and pay money. So the question that Rav Nachman asked Rav Huna is, Lirabos Shove Kesef, the word Kesef Yoshiv Lulav comes to teach us that you can pay with Shava Kesef, Vafilu Subin, even bran. So how do you reconcile the two? We have, again, had discussed this previously. It's not a surprise question for us. So here we have another way to interpret. How do we reconcile the pasuk that seems to say you have to pay with the best of your lands, Meitav Sodeyo, Meitav Karmo Yishalem, versus the pasuk that says that you can pay even with Shava Kesef? So the Gemara answers, Hochamai Askinan, you know what we're dealing with over here? Bidalesley. The person doesn't have any fields. He doesn't have Meitav Sodeyu. He doesn't have Meitav Karmo. The guy doesn't own any real estate. He doesn't have any fields. So then in that situation, Kesef Yoshiv Livolov. So that's the simple answer that the Gemara gives now. Gemara says, wait a second, Bidalesley. If the guy doesn't have any fields, so then Pshita, of course, well, he doesn't have to pay damages because he doesn't have fields. So that doesn't seem to really be the answer. So the Gemara says, no, it is. Ma'al detema, I might have thought on my own that if the guy doesn't have fields, nevertheless, he has to go and sell his metaltolin. He has to sell his shavah kesef. He has to sell his subin. And say, aminalei zil tirach zadin va'aisei le'kesef. Go and sell your stuff and bring money. So I would have said that shavah kesef doesn't work. On my own, I would have said, if we didn't have the pasuk kesef, yoshiv levolof, to teach us Shava Kesef, give Kesef, I would have said, no, you have the Subin, you go and sell the Subin and bring the guy a $100 bill. You can't go and give him $100 worth of bran if you cause $100 worth of damage. You have to go and sell your Subin and you have to be Matriach. You have to go and trouble yourself to go and find a buyer for it and sell it and then bring him the cash. That's what I might have thought on my own, that we would tell the guy, Amrinalei, Zil Torach, you go and trouble yourself and Zadin and sell the Subin, but I see like Kesef and go bring him the Kesef. Komashulam, that's not what we say. We allow him to go and just give the Shavah Kesef directly without making him go and sell it. Okay. Rav Asi tells us, Kisofim Hare Hein Kikarka. Rav Asi seems to be making an unrelated comment over here, ultimately we'll end up saying V'chein Omer Rav Asi. Ultimately we'll say the Rav Asi holds the same way that we just brought down from the question that was asked from Rav Nachman to Rav Huna, and Rav Huna responded and explained that you can give Shava Kesef over here. So the bottom line is that Kesofim Harehin Kikarka. Rav Asi is going to make, he makes right now what seems to be an enigmatic statement, but ultimately it will be the same statement that Rav Huna made. We'll have to get to that first. So he makes this statement, Kesofim Harehin Kikarka. Money is like karka. So the Gemara asks the obvious question. So what is Rav Asi teaching us? If you're telling me, Elaim, if you're telling me that he's coming to teach us, Le'inyan Meitav, that he's telling us that you can pay back with Meitav Sodeyu, Meitav Karma Yishalem, but if you don't have that, so then you can give him Kesef or Shava Kesef, so then I know Rav Huna. Then what's he adding on to what Rav Huna just said? So the Gemara says, let's try to figure out that he's saying something different. Ultimately, tomorrow we'll decide. We can figure out that he's saying something different, and we'll ultimately say, yeah, he's saying the same exact thing as Rav Huna, and we should have said over here, V'chein Amar Rav Asi. Likewise, Rav Asi said the same thing as Rav Huna. But for now, we're trying to figure out a different way to understand Rav Asi. So the Gemara suggests, Ella Lishnei Achim Shechoku. Rav Asi is dealing with a case where there are two brothers that got a Yerusha from their father, and they divided up the Yerusha, they divided up the estate. Now, they didn't divide it up exactly, you take half of this field, and I'll take half of this field. You take half of the money, I'll take half of the money. They said, listen, I'm more interested in real estate. And the other one said, I'm more interested in money. So the Nata Lechad Karka, the Echad Kesofim. So they each took the same value, but one took the 100% of the karka, and the other one took 100% of the money. So each of them got $1,000. One of them got $1,000 worth of karka, and the other one got $1,000 worth of money. Now, what happens then? Along comes Ubo Baal Chov, a Baal Chov of their father, comes and says, hey, your father owed me the money. The property is leaned against this. Your father never paid me back. And therefore, I have a right to go into the liened property and take the liened property back. The orphans don't have to pay back, but the liened property is still considered lien. So he can't go to the orphans and say, give me the $1,000 that your father owes me. But what he can do is go to the liened property and go take that. Just like the father had sold the liened property to somebody, that he would have the right to go and collect the balchov from that liened property, even from the Yerusha. He has the right to go and collect from the liened property that is now Yerusha. So therefore, this balchov comes along, and he can't go take back the from the $1,000 worth of cash that one of the brothers took as his Yerusha, but he goes and takes the $1,000 worth of karka to pay off the $1,000 debt that the father had owed. Now, what happens? The Ozil Hai, the brother that got the karka, says, hey, I'm now at the Yerusha. He can go. So he says, now the Yerusha is not worth $2,000, $1,000 of karka and $1,000 of cash. The Yerusha actually is just $1,000 of cash. So I'm entitled to get half of that. You got $500 and I get $500. So give me back the $500 that you took the full $1,000 for because you thought I had $1,000 of karka. I didn't get the $1,000 of karka, and therefore, v'shaku palgo b'ksofim b'day, and I get to keep $500 of what you took originally. So Gemara says, is that the chiddush that Rav Asi is coming to teach us? Pshita. Why would you think otherwise? Hai bro, v'hai lab bro. Well, the brother that got the cash is a son and an inheritor. He's a brother. And the other son is not a brother. He's not entitled to Yerusha. So if the Yerusha really wasn't 2,000, the Yerusha really was 1,000, because 1,000 was taken by the Baal Chov. So of course they split it, the $1,000, 50-50. So that can't be what he's coming to teach us. So Gemara says, there's another way to even learn this question and answer. We come to the same conclusion. Others say no. In fact, that he doesn't have the right to go and get anything from the brother who took the cash. Le'idach girsa, you do the exact opposite and say, the Amar Leh, the brother who took the cash, can say to the brother who took the karka, hey, karka is better than cash, maybe. Why do you think I took the cash? L'hochi shaklik sofim. I took the cash for exactly this reason, because in case a Baal Chov comes along, I would be protected. No, you wanted the karka, I let you have the karka. It's better to have the karka. So I said, okay, you get the karka, but I get the security of knowing in case somebody comes to grab the karka, my state of my share of the Yerusha is still intact. If somebody were to have stolen my money, I can't come back to you. Let's say I lost the money. I put it underneath my mattress and it's not there the next day. I put it in the bank and it's not there the next day. Well, somebody pickpocketed me. So I can't come to you and say, hey, I lost the half of my Yerusha. Give me half that you got. So you can't do that. That's why you took the Ira, because you didn't want to lose it. You can't lose karka. You could lose money. That's why you said, oh, I'm going to take the karka because I'm afraid of losing the money. No, I was willing to take that risk of the money. So if I lost it, I can't come to you and say, hey, give me half of the karka. So too, the e mitarfa lo mishtamla loch midi minai. And likewise, I can say to you, I took the less desirable money, but I didn't have to take the risk that a Baal Chov was going to come along. So according to the second version, it's also pshita, but a different way. The first way, it's pshita that the brothers would have to split the $1,000 of cash. And the second way of learning it is that the brothers don't split the $1,000 of cash. Listen, each of them took what they took for their various reasons. And tough luck to the brother that unfortunately lost his karka because the Baal Chov grabbed it. So in any event, that can't be the answer, what Rav Asi is telling us, Sofim Harei Kikarka. So he says, okay, let's try again. Ella, you know, we're dealing with, again, the Yerusha situation with two brothers who are inheriting from their father. L'shnei Achim Shecholku. But in this situation, instead of one taking cash and one taking karka, there was just karka in the estate. Leave cash out of it for a moment. And one brother, Reuven, took field A, and the other brother, Shimon, took field B. Now, each of them, those fields are leaned for any Baal Chov that their father had. And then along comes the Baal Chov, who bought Baal Chov, the Natal Chalko Shalechem had. He didn't take 50% of his Chov from one of the brothers and 50% of the Chov from the other brother. He went to Reuven, the first brother, and he said, okay, here's my document. Here, he went to court, and he said, give me back that karka. That karka is leaned against the loan that I gave to your father, and therefore he's entitled to, and the court gives him the karka that Reuven inherited. Now, in this situation, what does Shimon have to do? Does he have to give up his piece of karka? He said, listen, that's why I took this piece of karka, and you got that piece of karka, tough luck to you. If you'd taken my piece of karka, it would have been tough luck on me. So what's the din? How did the brothers now do it? Reuven lost his karka. Does he have a right or not have a right to go to Shimon and say, split the karka that you got from me? So it's a three-way machlokas. And we want to suggest that Rav Asi is telling us, Kisofim Harei Hein Kikarka. And we'll see in a moment what that means, but that's how we want to suggest that Rav Asi is teaching us, because he's one of the three Bali Plukt over here. So the Gemara says, but he already taught us this din. For Amra Rav Asi Chodah Zimna. This din was already a machlokas between Rav, Shmuel, and Rav Asi. So why would he repeat it again by saying Kisofim Harei Kikarka? What do we mean? The Itmar. Because we already learned previously. Exactly this case. So, Achim Shechoku. You have Reuven and Shimon, two brothers that inherited from their father, and Reuven took one piece of karka, and Shimon took another piece of karka. And then the Baal Chov, the father, comes along with Baal Chov, the Natal Chelku Shelech Liam. He goes and takes Reuven's karka, legitimately, in Beis Din, and Reuven lost his karka. Now, what does Reuven have the rights to do? Shimon has the karka, but Reuven got no karka now. He lost his karka. What are Reuven's rights to getting half of Shimon's karka? So, this is a three-way machlokis. Rav Amar, Botla Machlokis. The Machlokis here means the Chaluka. It doesn't mean a Machlokis. It doesn't mean a fight. It means the division. So, also Chaluka, Rashi says, Botela, the original divvying up of the estate that the brothers did, that Reuven got piece A and Shimon got piece B, that is gone. When Mavato, that Chaluka, the Chosrin, and they go back and redivide the remaining piece of karka. So Shimon's piece now goes back into the kitty, and they divide up the karka that Shimon got, piece number two, karka number two, and Reuven gets half of that, and Shimon gets half of that. So that's what Rav says, bought the machlokas, because after all, Reuven didn't really inherit anything. The inheritance was taken away that Reuven gotten by the Baal Chov. So therefore, they now have to go redivide up the karka that their father left them, which is now only land number two, karka piece number two, and Reuven gets half of it, and Shimon retains half of it. Fine. That's Rav's opinion. Baal Machlokas. Shmuel Amar, tough luck. Shmuel Amar, viter. Rashi says, ebayed. Reuven lost out. No, when they divided up the karka that the father left them as an estate, Reuven took property A, and now owns property A, it no longer is part of the estate, it no longer does Shimon have any share in it, and vice versa. The piece of property that Shimon took no longer is part of the estate, it doesn't belong at all to Reuven, it totally belongs to Shimon. A Baal Chov later on, after this Chalukah, comes along and takes away Reuven's property, tough luck, Viter, he lost it, Reuven lost it, and has no claim at all on Shimon. That's Rav's opinion. That's Shmuel's opinion. We'll explain in a moment why. What's the rationale behind the Shitas? But now we have the Shita that we're interested in for our discussion, the Rav Asi. The Rav Asi, Omar Rav Asi says, now the two interpretations of what he says according to Rashi, I'll give the first one first, and then I'll give that's the one that Rashi prefers, and then I'll tell you the second one afterwards. So Rav Asi says, no tell Revia Bekarka, Revia Bemos. The way we understood Rav a moment ago was that Rav says that Reuven is entitled to half, 50% of the karka that Shimon got. Rav Asi seems to agree to that to a certain extent. He says, and the more we'll explain what the rationale between Rav Shmuel and Rav Asi are in a moment. So I'll leave the rationale in a moment. Let's first understand what the halacha is according to Rav Asi. He says that this description over here of Revia Karka or Revia Mos, the U Revia Mos is an or. The first understanding, the preferred Rashi's understanding is that it's or. Since Rav Asi is not sure, is Rav right or is Shmuel right? So he says, we'll split this 50% that Rav says you should get 50% of the remaining karka, and Shmuel says that you get 0% of the 50% of the karka, and Rav Asi says, we'll split that, since I'm not sure who should get it. As Rashi points out, this is Momon Hamutal Besofek, and therefore Momon Hamutal Besofek is Cholkin. So they're having an argument about this 50% of the karka that Shimon got. The other 50% Shimon definitely owns. So it's only the 50% that Shimon got that Reuven is claiming that we're now having a discussion on. Since it's Sofek, we don't know what it is. So let's split that. So Rashi's preferred shot is that Rav Asi holds that Reuven is entitled to get 50% of that 50%. In other words, a quarter of the total karka. So either he can collect revia of a karka, he can get one quarter of the karka that Shimon inherited, or Shimon has the right to say, I don't want to give you the karka, here's the value of it, a quarter of it in money. So that's what it means. Kisofim harehin kekarka, the Rav Asi taught us. So why is he telling it to us again? He already taught it to us in this discussion. That's Rashi's preferred shot of Rav Asi, and that it means he only gets 25%, either 25% of the total karka or 25% of the value in money. The second shot that Rashi gets is that, no, he gets both. He gets half of the of the karka that Shimon inherited, but Shimon has the right to say to him, I'll give you half of it in karka and half of it in cash. So he'll get a quarter of the total field in the actual karka, and he'll get a quarter of the value in cash. That's Rashi's less preferred pshat. No to revia b'karka and urevia b'mamos. Okay, so this, again, we're trying to say, what does Rav Ashi tell us? Kisof and Hariyah Kikarka, if this is the answer, so he already taught it to us once. Now, what's the rationale between Rav, Shmuel, and Rav Ashi? So, Rav, on my Rav's opinion, is bought the machlokas. We said that we undo the chalukah, we undo the inheritance divvying up, and we have to redo it again because Reuven lost his share of the fields to the Bachov, so it's not fair. Why should he lose it? The fields belong to both Reuven and Shimon. They were taken away. So now we have to redo the chalukah. And the field that Shimon got, which is the only field that's left, they're now going to divide 50-50. And that's because Kisavar Ha'achim Shechalku Ki Yarshim Havu, because we still view them as Yarshim. We still view them as they each inherited a certain part of the estate. And if that part that Reuven inherited was taken away, so he never really inherited. So they have to redivide up the estate. Shmuel disagrees. Shmuel Mar Viter, Ebed, he lost it because we don't view it as an inheritance anymore. Kisavar, Achin Shechoku, Lekuchos. It's as if they purchased their field and they purchased it without a chrayis. Ukelokeach, Shalobi Achrayis Domi. So when Reuven got his field, that's it. End of the discussion. He's like a purchaser of the field and he has no rights anymore to Shimon's portion, vice versa. Shimon got his section, he has no rights to Reuven's section. Unfortunately, the Balchov came and took it from Reuven. Tough luck on Reuven. That's Shmuel's opinion because we view them as purchasers, as lekuchos, and not as inheritors that now have to redivide up the estate because the original division wasn't accurate. Here they're purchasers, and there was nothing wrong with the purchase. Reuven purchased, so to say, his share of the Yerusha. Shimon purchased his share of the Yerusha. There was no achrayis over here. There was no guarantees that in case something happens to your portion of the Yerusha, I'll make it up to you. And therefore, Shmuel says, Ebed, Viter, he's lost it. And Rav Ashi says, I'm not sure who's right. Rav or Shmuel. So Rav Ashi Omar, in Rashi's preferred pshat, no tell Reviya Bekako or Reviya Bemos. That's because Musafkale, he's unsure. Rav Ashi's not sure. Do we view it like Rav? E kiyarshin damu, and therefore Reuven is entitled to 50% of Shimon's property, or e kilekuchos damu like Shmuel, and he's not entitled to any of it. So this 50% of the property that Shimon inherited is mamon hamutul b'safek, and therefore hilkach mamon hamutul b'safek no till reviya b'karka or ureviya b'mos. He's entitled to 50% of the 50% that is in safek, which means a quarter of the total amount. Either he gets it as cash, or he can get it as karka. That would be up to Shimon. And in this situation, this is what Rav Ashi meant when he said, Ksofim harei kakarka. So the Gemara's question is, so why is he telling it to us again? We already learned this. So ultimately, we don't have any other way to explain Rav Ashi, and therefore the Gemara says, Ela, my harehein kikarka. So what did his statement that Ksofim harehein kikarka actually mean? It meant linyan meitav, to teach us that if you wish and you can't pay with meitav sadeu, meitav karmo, you don't have or you don't want to pay with the meitav sadeu. So then you have the right to go and pay with money. And that's what Rav Ashi is teaching us. That's the same thing as Rav Huna. Yehachi hainu the Rav Huna. So the Gemara says, yeah, taka. It should have actually had said, Ema v'chein amar Rav Ashi. Like I said, it should have said, and Rav Ashi says the same thing as Rav Huna, not as if Rav Ashi was a totally separate statement. Okay, Gemara now tells us another din of Rav Huna. Amar Zera, amar Rav Huna, b'mitzvah ad shlish. What are we talking about over here? Seemingly unrelated, but the fact that it's Rav Huna and it's dealing over here with a fraction, before we just said, Rav Ashi said a quarter of the karka or a quarter of the field, and here he's going to say a third, so that's why this is listed over here. Again, they did this all by heart, and if they had two statements from Rav Huna that dealt with fractions, so it made sense to put them over here. That's how the Mefarshim explain this. In any event, Rav Zera says in the name of Rav Huna that when you're spending money for a mitzvah, you have to go ad shlish. Now, what does that mean, ad shlish? So Gemara says, my shlish, what are you talking about over here? For a third, you have to go up to spend up a third of the money for the mitzvah. What does that mean? And we turn to Tess on my base. Elaim, if you're going to tell me it means shlish beso, that a person has to spend, as the top Rashi tells us, shechayiv adam levazveiz b'mitzvahs lulav, let's say, o tzitzis, o sefer Torah, shlish, my sheishlo, he has to spend a third of his estate to go do these important mitzvahs. It's so beautiful that so many of the chaylei tzal are now asking for tzitzis, that there literally is a shortage of tzitzis in Eretz Yisrael. I know in our shul we had a tzitzis flaxing campaign to make the olive drab tzitzis garments for the chayalim. And many, many other shuls and many other places are doing this. So it's such a beautiful idea. So if a person has to go and purchase tzitzis, or if a person has to purchase a sefer Torah, so how much money does he have to spend to do this mitzvah? So if you're going to tell me, Ilei Mo Shlish Mi Beiso, he has to spend a third of his wealth in order to do the mitzvah, so then the Gemara says, Elam Yata, E Isrami Le Tlosa Mitzvasa. If three mitzvahs came his way at the same time, so then Leisev Lekule Beise, he'd have to give away his entire estate. Let's say he had to buy a lulav, he had to buy a pair of tzitzis, and he had to buy a Sefer Torah. So he'd have to spend a third of his estate on the lulav, a third of his estate on the tzitzis, and a third of his estate on the Sefer Torah. So then the guy got nothing left. How could that possibly be? Now, Tosus points out, that Lav Davka, they came all at the same time, and it doesn't mean literally he'd spend his whole estate, because he'd have to spend a third of what he has left. So let's say the first mitzvah came along, let's say lulav, so he spent a third of his estate. Now, he only has two-thirds of his estate left. Now, when he has to spend a third of his estate on the next mitzvah, it's not going to be a third of what it was originally, it's going to be a third of what's left. So he's still going to retain some at the end of spending for all these three mitzvahs, but he'll have a much lower amount in his estate. So according to Tosis, it's still the same question. Does the person have to really give up almost all, if not all, his estate to do a mitzvah? So that can't be it. Elom Rav Zera. So Rav Zera said, the Hidur mitzvah, at Shlish mitzvah. That when you're doing a Hidur mitzvah, as Rashi says, She'im Motze Beis Sifrei Torah. A person sees two Sifrei Torahs. He has to buy a Sefer Torah. There's a chief of a person buy a Sefer Torah. Today, according to the Rush and many others, we fulfill that by buying Svarim. So we don't have to buy a Sefer Torah. We can buy Svarim and fulfill the mitzvah of writing your own Sefer Torah. In any event, so the person has two Sifrei Torah over there. Liknos. Okay? And the Echad Hodur Mechaveiro. And one is a much nicer Sefer Torah than the other one. No, he can accomplish the mitzvah with the less nice Sefer Torah, but we have a rule, as Rashi tells us, Zeh Keli V'Yanveyu. It's nicer to go and glorify the mitzvahs of HaKadosh Baruch Hu by doing the mitzvah in a nicer fashion. Zeh Keli, this is my God V'Yanveyu, and I will glorify him. So therefore, what should he do? So Rashi says, Yosef Shlish Hadomim. It's better to go and spend more, up to a third more. We'll define what a third means in a second, in order to do the mitzvah in a more glorified way. Go and glorify HaKadosh Baruch Hu by doing the mitzvahs in the best possible way. Go and buy a Sefer Torah that is beautiful. Lulav Noah, a beautiful lulav. Talis Noah, beautiful talis. Tzitzis Noah, beautiful tzitzis. So therefore, do the mitzvah in the better way. If you have the choice of doing it in a way that's acceptable, a way that's better, do it in the better way. And it means, therefore, go and spend a third more for doing that mitzvah. Now, what does it mean, a third more? Bar Ravashi. Does it mean shlish milagavav? Or does it mean o shlish milavar? Now, we have this when we always talked about a chomesh. You have to add on a chomesh, let's say, if a person did me'ila, rachmanu l'tzlam, by accident, so he has to go pay back the principal, and he has to add on a fifth. So what does the fifth mean? So let's say he usurped $100. So a fifth of $100 would be $20, but that's not what it means. It means you go and take a fourth of the $100, which is $25, and add it on to the principal. So the total amount that you're paying back is the principal, $100, plus the $25, so it's $125. Oh, now the $25 is a fifth of the $125. So that's what it means, miligab or milavar. So Rashi explains, miligab would mean kigon. Let's say the smaller Sefer Torah, imakoton, nimkar b'shisha. The smaller Sefer Torah was worth six. That's $6,000. So Yosef, shnei dinari. He's talking about dinarim over here. I just gave it an example of thousands. So it was worth six. So now the third of six is two. So add on two, dainu shlish miligab vav. This is called shlish miligab. This is a shlish from the inside. And Shevetoch HaDomim, a third of the six, B'yikach Esahidur. So he'll have to pay eight in order to fulfill this idea of being Mahadir, to do the mitzvah in the most optimal way by paying a third more. It means a third from the inside. So it's a third of six, which is two, and pay eight rather than paying six. Or does it mean Oshlish Milavar? No, it means you divide the amount up into two equal parts. So six, you divide it up into three and three. And then you add on this half to make it nine. And now the three is a third of the total nine. Let's, like we said before, the 25 is a fifth of the 125. So to over here, the third that we're talking about, the three, is a third of nine. So you divide up the six into two component parts, Rashi says, and therefore you add on a third to make it nine. So, miligav would mean that you would pay 8, and milavar means that you would pay 9. So which one is it? The Gemara says teku. Here we don't give a resolution. When it comes to a chomesh in the Torah, so then we know that it means milavar. It means from the outside that you take the 25 of 125. That's how you get the chomesh, and not 25 of 100. But here, it's left with the teku. Gemara then concludes its discussion by saying, "B'mar Rav in Eretz Yisrael, Ami Mishmei Rav Zera." They said over in the name of Rav Zera the following. It means ad shlish mishalo. It meant that you add on to do the mitzvah in the more optimal way. His nor alive the mitzvos that you add on a third that comes from your own money, so to say. That's money. The way the Rabbeinu Chananel understands this is the money that you worked hard for. So money that you really were matria for. Your work is a laborer, and the money that you have is a laborer. So then you only have to pay a third more to do the mitzvah. Mikan de'elach. However, the way Rabbeinu Chananel understands this is if you want to pay more than that, so then Mishal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That if you got a Yerusha, that if you got you won the lottery, something that you didn't really work for, but it's your money, it's yours, you're halachically, it's yours, so that you can pay more than a third. That you should give from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from the hard work that you did, the income that you gained by your working hard, that you only have to give up to a third. But if you got easy money, so Rabbeinu Chananel says you should give that from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to say, he gave you found money, he gave you free money, easy money, so that you can give even more. That's the way Rabbeinu Chananel understands this. The simple understanding, though, from Rashi is that Mikan Ba'elach, you have to give Mishal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it means Masha Yosef Behidur Yoser Al Shlish. That which you gave more than a third, you were obligated to really give up to a third more. And that which you gave even more than that, Parlo HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'chayv. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will pay you that money back in your lifetime. As opposed to the third, which you were Hisnor Alive in Mitzvah, that you went and did above and beyond, that you paid more for the Mitzvah. You could have been Yosef with the sixth Diner Sefer Torah. But instead you went for the 8 or 9 Diner Sefer Torah, so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu won't pay you back in this world. She'enu nifralo b'chayiv, the previous Rashi says, as the Gemara tells us elsewhere, Kidaminan hayom la'asosam v'lo hayom lito scharim. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah, the very beginning of Avodah Zarah, tells us that today you're supposed to do the mitzvahs, the schar you collect in the Olam HaEmes, in the world to come. But that's only for the third that you're doing hisnor Lefanai b'mitzos, but when you go above and beyond that, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will pay you back even in this world. That's a simple understanding according to Rashi. Okay, now we go to the next Mishnah. Mishnah tells us, Kol shechafti b'shmiraso hechsharti es nizko. What does this mean? It's a little bit of an enigmatic Mishnah. We'll explain it much more in the Gemara, but we'll explain all the words now. So the Mishnah starts off and tells us that anything that you were delinquent in properly guarding your property, so kol shechafti b'shmiraso, I didn't do the shmir right. Shinis chayavti, Rashi says l'shomro, but I didn't do it right, and therefore hechsharti es nizko. I inadvertently allowed the damage to occur. I didn't actually damage, but I didn't watch my cow properly, and the cow gored, the cow damaged by eating, etc. So I didn't do my job, and as a result of my not doing my job properly, my property caused damage. So Rashi says klomar imhizik. If the property of mine goes and does damage, hichsharti v'zimanti osu hezek. I, so to say, allowed, I facilitated that damage to occur and invited that damage. Shelo shmartiv yofeh. I didn't go and watch my property properly. And kach matzosi. This is what Rashi says is the first pshat. Lishnachrin. Alternatively, Rashi says, hichsharti es nisko alai lahachshir. That it means that I facilitated over here the damage to occur, ulisaki this nisko, and in order for me to go and correct the damage, I have to go and make it up. Klomar ani chayiv l'shalem. I have to go and make that up because I allowed it to happen and I have to go and fix it. And this, he says, he heard me pimori, hear from his Rebbe. Okay, so basically it's the same idea though, that you are obligated to pay for damages that you allowed to occur because you didn't do a proper shmira. Now, hechsharti b'miksas nisko, let's say the person was partially to blame for not watching it. Hechshati b'miksas nisko. Because of my not watching it, half the damage would occur, but the other half would have occurred, let's say, in any event. Rashi explains, Hayechsharti lo damiel hechsharti come up. This doesn't mean the same thing as the first part of the mission that we just read, that I wasn't careful watching it, and therefore I'm obligated. Because doha vadai zimantihu. The first part, he definitely caused the damage. Kolomer im zimanti es miksas nisko. But here we're talking about that somehow I invited in half of the damage. Nevertheless, alpha b'shalo zimanti kulo, even though I wasn't, so to say, responsible for all of the damage, chafti l'shalim es nisko, kihichshir kol nisko, kiilu zimantiv kulo. So I'm still obligated to pay for all of the damage. Now, what exactly is this talking about? So Gemara will explain this somewhat enigmatic part of the Mishnah. So first part of the Mishnah says, if I was negligent and basically allowed, I didn't do a proper shmira on my property, so then I have to pay for the damages. And even if I somehow only was involved in causing part of the damages because of my lack of properly watching, so that's the words that we use right now, so then I still have to pay for the full damages. Chafti b'tashlumi nisko. I have to pay for everything. Kehechsher kol nisko. If I caused, so to say, all of the damage. Okay, so Rashi says, we'll wait till we get to the Gemara to learn this, so we'll wait till we get to the Gemara to learn this. Now, when do you have to go and pay the damages? So there's three scenarios that the Mishnah is going to tell us. Number one, if it's nechasim she'ein behem me'ila, in other words, if it's not hektish, you can be mo'el from hektish, you can't be mo'el from somebody else's property. If I inadvertently sat on your cow, I thought it was my cow, and I sat on your cow, and I got benefit from sitting on it, it helped me go from here to there. So I got benefit from your cow. So if this is the base of Middish's cow, then I committed me'ila. But if it's your cow, I didn't commit me'ila. I didn't destroy it, I didn't ruin it, and also, okay, I inadvertently sat on it. I'm sorry, I won't do it again. I don't have to pay you anything because I didn't depreciate your cow at all. But if it's me'ila, if it was Hektish's, so then if I got a shove of prut is worth of anah, then I have been over me'ila. So in regards to damages, because the pasuk says shor re'ehu, it has to be, we had this previously as well, a number of different ways to interpret that. So right now we're understanding shor re'ehu means only the dinim of damages occurs when it's your friend's ox that is gored, your friend's property that your ox gores, but not Hektish's property. So the dinim of nezek that we're discussing in our Mishnah are only for property she'ein bahem me'ila. As Rashi says, Kolmar, im hizakti nechosim she'ein bohem me'ila. If a person damages his friend's property, then ani chayev l'shalim, then you have to pay. However, avol im hizakti nechse hektish, but if I damaged hektish, so ainu chayev, somewhat paradoxically, I don't have to pay. And this is learned out, the nafkalon kulo nezikim mishor re'ehu, because the pasuk says, he goes each as shor re'ehu v'meis. So we'll see more about this also in the Gemara, but basically, this part of the Mishnah is telling us that only when you damage another person, when you're damaging Chulin, do you have the obligation to pay. But somewhat paradoxically, if you're damaging Hektish, your ox gored Hektish, you don't have to pay. Now, it doesn't mean that you can damage Hektish, and it doesn't mean that you never have to pay. We'll have to learn more about this when we get to the Gemara. So here right now, we're just telling us that the normal rules of damage are applicable with Re'ehu, but not with Hektish. Nechosim she'ein b'hamila. The second statement that the Mishnah is teaching us is Nechosim Shehein Shel Bnei Bris, that the dinim of Nezek that we're discussing apply only with somebody who's a Bnei Bris, a Yid. And as Rashi tells us, La'afuke Nochri, as opposed to a Nochri, the Einu Chayav B'Nizokim, that there you don't have the same dinim of being responsible for Nizokim of the Nochri. Doesn't mean you can go and damage the Nochri, but the rules are different. That's the second statement that the Mishnah wants to make. So the first one is to exclude Hektish. The second one is to include a Nachri, somebody who's not a Bnei Bris. And the third statement is Nichosim Hamiyuchadim. It means, over here, as Rashi says, Sheish Lem Balim, that they're owned by somebody, as opposed to Lafuke, the Hefker. That if a person goes, Shemi Hizakti Nichosim, the Hefker, if I went and damaged properties or items that were Hefker, didn't belong to anybody, Potter, then I don't have anybody to I don't have any obligation to pay. And more will say, well, obviously, who are you paying? It's Hefker. So, again, we'll discuss this as well. But this section of the Mishnah is coming to exclude Kochim, Nochrim, and Hefker items. Then the Mishnah continues and says that these dinim of Nezek, where they do apply, they apply u'b'chol makom, any place that damage is done, with the following exceptions. But in general, wherever the damage is done, so it doesn't make any difference, the dinim of damages apply and you're obligated to pay. However, with the exception, chutz, ne'rishus ha'miyuchedes l'mazik. If the mazik, he has a field, and his bull, which is known to be a goring bull, he lets run free in his field because nobody else is there, and he can only damage his own property. So the mazik is saying, I'm letting my shor mu'ad run free over here in wild in this corralled field. And then Shimon comes along and says, hey, there's a nice field for me to go and pass to my animal. And he lets his animal go into that field with the oxes. And the ox sees the animal and gores it. In that situation, since the damage occurred in the field that was miyuchedes l'masik, it was the masik's field. So therefore, the masik doesn't have to pay any damages of somebody who came in there without permission into his field. Furthermore, urishus hanizak ve'amasik. If it was a field that they both had permission to use, so the mazik is allowed to put his goring cow in there, And somebody else could put it there, but knows that there's a gory cow in there. So buyer beware. If you want to put your cow into this field, which the Mathik has the right to be there, then don't complain afterwards that your cow got damaged. So in the case where it was purely the property of the Mathik, or even it was a place where the Mathik had the right to be there, so then, Kishahizik, in that situation, there is no obligation to pay. But in all other places, there is an obligation to pay. And finally, the Mishnah concludes, Kishahizik Chav, when you do cause damage and you have to pay, so Chav HaMazik L'shali Tashlumi Nezik B'mei Tava Aretz. In that situation, when you do have to pay, you pay with Mei Tava Aretz. Now, why is this repeated here again? We had this in the first Mishnah. So we already discussed this previously as well. This was related to the machlokas of Rav and Shmuel as to how we view Mava. Rav said that Mava was Adam, and Shmuel said that Mava was Shade. So the reason why this is repeated over here is because according to Shmuel, the din of Mava is Shane, so therefore we haven't yet learned the dinim of Karen, of horn goring. So therefore, that's why it has to repeat over here. And the Gemara will remind us again why it needed to tell us for Rav, who says that Mava was Adam. So then we already learned that previously, so why is it repeated over here? The Gemara will discuss that later on. Okay, so we now have our Mishnah, we finished off the Mishnah, Hamazik L'shalim Tashlumi Nezek, B'mei Tava Aretz. He has to go and play the damage with the best of the land, and now we can start the Gemara. Tana Rabban, the Begar brings down the following brisa. Kol Shechavti Bishmiraso Hichsharti Es Nizko. Like our Mishnah, if you were somewhat causing the damage because you didn't watch your property correctly, so then you have allowed, you facilitated the damage, and therefore you're obligated to pay. Now, what's the case? Ketzad. So we have, for example, shor, an ox, or a boar, or a pit, shemesorin lecheresh shote v'kotet, that you handed these over to incompetent people to watch. A cheresh is a person who's halachically incompetent, he can't speak, he can't hear, he wasn't considered a bar das. A shote is a person who never has mental issues, and their definitions of exactly what a shote is, but he also doesn't have das, and a katan, by definition, doesn't have das. So if you handed over these potential damaging agents, like a shor or a boar, to the chayri shote and katan, and they then damaged the hiziku, so chayv l'shalim, because you gave it over to an incompetent person, and duh, why are you surprised that the damage occurred? So therefore, you're held liable. However, the Brisa makes an enigmatic statement and says, as opposed to Masha Enkei Be'esh, if you gave this Chayri Shota and Kotan a fire, and they then did damage with the fire, you're not obligated to pay. Now, the obvious question is, why is there a difference between giving over to the incompetent person a shor or a bar, you're chayef to pay, but if you give them over fire, you're not chayef to pay. Why is that? So, B'maya Skin, the word says, what are we talking about? If you're telling me, Ilema B'shor Kashur, if you handed over a well-protected shor, it's tied up, and you go to the Chayri Shoten Kotan and say, watch this shore that's tied up, or Ubar Mechusa, or watch this bar, this pit that has warning lights around it, and there's tape around it, and a cover on it, and says, don't go here, there's a bar over here. So then, you have to say that the comparable case with Aisha is that he gave this fire to the Chayri Shoten Kotan, it wasn't real fire. The Kavatsi, the equivalent of the protected shore, the protected bar, the Kavasi Gabi Eish is a gacheles. He gave him a coal. It wasn't a flame. He just gave him a coal. Okay, if you blow on it, you bellow it, you go and ignite it more, so then it becomes a rip-roaring flame that can cause damage. But right now it's a coal. So the equivalent of a watched shore, a shor kashur, or a bar mechusa would be a coal and not a rip-roaring flame. So then, maishnohacha. So then, why, again, would you say that if you handed over a protected ox or a pit, you're chayev, but if you handed over a protected fire, in other words, you handed over a gacheles and not a shalheves, so then you're not chayev. Why would that be the case? You're not comparing things that are the same. You're saying that if you handed over a protected shor and bar, you're chayev. So then why wouldn't you be chayev if you handed over a protective age? And if you're not chayev for the age, then why should you be chayev for the protected shor and bar? And vice versa. If you're going to tell me Ella Bishar Mutar, you're telling me you handed over an unchained ox. So you're handing over an ox that's running loose, Ubar Magula, and there are no warning lights and no tape around this bar. And you're basically telling this incompetent person, try to watch this shark, try to watch this pit. So the equivalent would be by the fire, the Kavasi Gabiesh, the similar giving over of the fire to the incompetent person, then would be shalhavis. You're giving him over a lit torch. You're not giving over a coal that he has to blow on. You're giving him over a lit torch. So again, the Gemara could have said over here, maishno hachi, maishno hachi. However, the Gemara just gives a little bit more expansive answer. It's the same answer, ultimately. Why should there be a difference over here? And it brings it down in the following way. Masha ain kim be'esh, the potter. We said that in regards to the esh, you're potter. But if you gave over the untied ox and the uncovered pit, you're chayiv. So why should that be? Rish Lakish, mishmei the chizkia. There's a machlokes between chizkia and Rabbi Yochanan. Rish Lakish and chizkia versus Rabbi Yochanan that we'll see in a moment. But Rish Lakish says the name of chizkia that we only said lo shanu elo shemasa lo gacheles v'liba. The only time you're chayiv by giving it over to the chayiv shota and katan is if you gave him over a lit flame. But if you gave him over a coal and he blew on it v'liba, so in that situation you're not chayiv. But Avol Shalheves, you're chayiv. But Shalheves, Reish Lakish said, shame of Chizkia, that you certainly are chayiv. So then, here we clearly have, according to Reish Lakish and Chizkia, that the din is not like what we just said, that by the flame, Shemasar L'Cheirish, you'd be potter. Here, no, it would be specifically chayiv. So my time of Doha Bari Hezeka, the reason is that you're chayiv because you're giving an incompetent person a lit flame. Don't be surprised if it goes and damages. So you're held responsible. So according to Reish Lakish, in the name of Chizkia, certainly this can't be correct. So how do we understand this brisa? In a moment, we'll explain how Rav Yochanan would understand this question, who argues with Reish Lakish, Mishum, Mishmei the Chizkia. In any event, so the only way to understand the Brice is as follows. We are dealing, like we said in the first place, that the shore was tied up, the pit was covered up, and the equivalent by the fire, Udukavasi Gabi Eish, was that he gave him over a coal, a gacheles, and not a lit flame. So how come by the shore of the bor you're chayiv, and by the gacheles you're not? And that which you said, Uduka Amris, why should the din be different? Because shor by the ox, even though it's tied up, darke lenatuke, it gets out of its chains. It gets out of the rope that you tied it up with, because that's what oxen do. They don't want to be tied up. So it's going to rip at it and rip at it and rip at it and rip at it until finally it tears the rope, it tears the chain, and it runs wild and does damage. So it's going to do that on its own. So therefore, you need a competent person to watch it. Bar, also dark in nature, because people are constantly walking there, and cars are going by, and there's rumbling, and there's all sorts of wagons going by, so the pit's going to get uncovered. And therefore, you need a competent person to watch it. And if you gave it over to an incompetent person, you facilitated this damage, and therefore you're chayiv. But the gacheles, the natural tendency of the gacheles is to go out. Who expects the Chayiv Shota Katan to go blow on it? And therefore, when they do that, they're doing that on their own. The shor and the bar, they got into damaging agents on their own. Whereas here, the gacheles, the Chayiv Shota Katan had to actively do something in order to make it into a damager. So, kama the shavik law, ma'amya, amya, ve'azla. The more you give it to the Chayiv Shota Katan, they're not going to blow on it. You wouldn't expect them to blow on it. And therefore, as a result, it would go out. It would get weaker. The coal would eventually become just a dead charcoal, not have any potential for a fire. So therefore, here, the Chayiv Shota Katan had to actively do something, as opposed to the shor and the bar, the Chayiv Shota Katan didn't have to actively do something. And that explains the difference why, by the shor and the bar, you chayiv, when you gave it over to a Chayiv Shota Katan, even though it was tied up and covered up, whereas by the coal, you're not chayiv, because there, he had to do something to it, and you were not held liable for what the Chayiv Shota Katan did. Now, we go back, before we just said, Reish Lakish, in the name of Chizkia, said that if you gave him over a flame, you would be chayiv. But Rav Yochanan disagreed. Rav Yochanan, Omar, afilu masalo shalheves, nami potter. According to Rav Yochanan, even if you gave a flame, a burning flame, over to the Chayiv Shota Katan, you're not chayiv. Why is that? The Kavase, according to him, so Rav Yochanan would explain the case as the shor was untied, the pit was uncovered. That's why you're chayiv. But with the flame, you're punter. So again, why should there be a difference going to Rav Yochanan between the two dinim? So the Gemara says, Hasam, in the case of the flame, the shalheves, tsafto the chayrish kogarim, his holding on to it, tsafto means like a connection. A tongue is called a tseves. So the connection over here, his holding on to it is what actually caused the damage. If he had put it down, so the flame would be right there. It wouldn't travel unless the wind blew it. So the Chayiv Shota Katan has to go do something. You're not held liable for what the Chayiv Shota Katan does. And therefore, that's why Rav Yochanan would say you're potter when it comes to giving him the shalheves. But as opposed to the shore that was untied or the pit that was uncovered, hacha, It wasn't because the Cheresh did something, the Cheresh of the Kodim did something. No, it's because the shard was untied. It's because the pit was uncovered. That's why the damage occurred. So again, similar to the way we explained it before, the Cheresh of the Kodim, if they have to do something in order for the damage to occur, then you're held unaccountable because you didn't do it. The Cheresh of the Kodim did it, and therefore you're not held responsible. But if the Cheresh of the Kodim just stood there, but they couldn't protect because they don't have das, and the damage occurred on its own by the shore or by the bar, so then you are chayiv. Okay, now we'll just start. We'll just get to the end of the daf. We won't go through the full brisa, but now we're going to bring down a brisa. Tana Rabbanan. Brisa tells us, chomer b'shor mi b'bar, and chomer b'bar mi b'shor. And we'll have this style, this brisa will go and continue in tomorrow's shiur for other things, so we'll just do this first part now. The brisa starts off and tells us that the dinim of shor have certain chumras compared to the dinim of bar in damage, and the din of bar has certain chumras than shor does in regards to the damages. Now, what do we mean? So chomer b'shor mi b'bar, that there are dinim in regards to shor that are stricter than are regards to the damages that a bar causes. For example, shashor mishalim is a kofer. If a shor gores a person and kills that person, so then kofer, there's a certain payment that you have to go and pay to the Nebuch, the Yarshim of the person that was killed. So that din is only by shor, based upon the psukim, and it's not by bor. Likewise, if you killed not a human being with your shor, but you killed an eved, so then there's a 30 shekel knas, the chayiv b'shloshim shel eved, and you pay 30 shekel if your ox, Rechman al-Islam, killed an eved knani. So there's a kofer that you pay if you killed a human being, that is a yid, and there's a kofer that you pay 30 shekel if you killed an eved, and these are only by shor, they're not by bor. If a person falls into a bor and dies, or an eved falls into a bor and dies, so then you're not chayiv. These dinim don't apply. You're not chayiv in the same way. Nigmar dino, once the shor is brought to Beis Din for a killing, let's say, so now it's considered a shor haniskal, and Beis Din paskins that this is a shor haniskal, so then also by not, as we had learned not that long ago, if you even shach this shor, so then you're not going to get any hanah from it. It is asur b'hanah. Shor haniskal is asur b'hanah. So therefore, this is a special, unique din by shor. The bar, if it kills somebody, it's not asur b'hanah. So you can still use it as a well. You can still use it for whatever purposes you need a pit for. So it is perfectly acceptable still to get hanah from it. So here's another difference. The shor is stricter than the bar. And likewise, the shor is darko leilech ulhasik. The shor moves about. It's a movable damaging agent. And Masha ain't came to bar. All of these dinim don't apply to bar. There's no din of kofir by a person, no din of the shloshim for an eved, there's no din of a shor niska loss of hana, and there is no capacity for this to move. The bar is stationary. Masha ain't came to bar. And likewise, there's chomer b'bar, maybe shor. There are dinim that the shor is less stringent than the bar. What are those? So shabor tchilas asiyosu l'nezek. A shor is originally a shor tam. It isn't automatically damaging, and therefore, you only pay chatzi nesek when it's a short time. But a bar, for minute one, that bar you pay full damages for. Umuad mitchilaso. So it is considered like a muad from the very, very beginning. So a bar is created, so to say, for damage, and you pay full damages from the very beginning, as opposed to masha'en kem yishar. You have a short time, which only pays chatzi nesek, because it's not tchilaso lehezek, because many shvarim are not going to go and damage. They sit there quietly, they eat their grass, and they're happy. You know, you antagonize them, so then that's not called a sharmuad if you antagonize it. But for it to go off on its own and become a sharmuad, that's unusual, and therefore it's not muad mitchilaso. Now, this is a good break point because we just finished the daf, and we'll continue in this price of discussing the various differences between the various types of damages in tomorrow's shir. Be'ezus Hashem, as I keep on saying, in the discourse of our learning about all of these damaging agents, may HaKadosh Baruch Hu protect Klal Yisrael from being damaged by the Rishoyim that are out to get us. Have a great day.